Davis Van Aptorp here with Matt Ford and Felix Tomsett here to make up for two match days of coverage. Dortmund won the Herbstmeisterschaft over the weekend, but lost their first Bundesliga game of the season. Also, there was a big game between Bayern Munich and Leipzig, and Schalke continued their struggles. But let's start the week first in Düsseldorf. So Dortmund, after winning the Herbstmeisterschaft, seemed to rest on their laurels a little bit because they went to Düsseldorf and was beaten for the first time in the Bundesliga, 2-1 to Düsseldorf. Felix, you were at the game.
I was. With the away fans, even.
Yeah. So
pretty interesting match.
What were your impressions? Because it seemed, from watching it on TV, it seemed like Düsseldorf were really up for this game.
They were. I mean, the feeling at the ground was, I would say, the same feeling I received from having a look at social media afterwards. Like Dortmund, I was with Dortmund fans, so my view at the game was mostly from a Dortmund perspective, and I got the feeling that the general sense of the game was generally the same. Many people were criticizing that rotational approach that Favre took to this game. Having Götze certainly wasn't something that the fans were pleased about, mostly from a tactical point of view. I mean, not from any other view. Also, I mean, the fact that Hakimi didn't play was certainly felt. Pulisic was pretty heavily criticized because he wasn't up for the game. And on the other hand, that Düsseldorf team was really up for it, as you said. They were fighting for every ball. They had a bit of luck with that second goal. I mean, I don't think that in 100 shots that would have gone in usually, but it was a brilliant goal. But at the end of the day, it was a deserved win. We got to say that.
Matt, you said before we went on air that this was kind of a coming for Dortmund. Why do you say that?
I'm not sure if it was coming, in that the results signified that a defeat was on the way. I don't think that's the case, but I said it was coming more in the sense that Dortmund were never going to go through this entire season unbeaten. In the week, Hans-Joachim Watzke said the same. He said they were completely aware that a defeat was going to come at some point. I think that's only to be expected. And it has come now. And maybe from some perspective, that's actually a good thing. Brings Dortmund down to earth a little bit. Gets that defeat out of the system and they can move on from that. Felix mentioned the rotation, having made four changes. Mainly going forward, although Schmelzer did come into the team in defence as well. He has been criticised for that, but I wrote a piece afterwards saying that I don't really go along with the criticism. I think
I don't either. I mean, yeah. I mean, it's I think a midweek
every,
game.
I think it's a very easy one to throw at teams. Oh, right. Rotation, he rotates too much. But Favre has I think even by numbers, the numerically largest squad in the league. And we saw how many changes he made last week away at Monaco when they went and won their 2-0. So rotation is not a bad thing. It's actually the complete opposite. It's actually a completely understandable and sensible way to go about it, especially when you've got three big Bundesliga games just before Christmas in the space of 7 days. The other two being arguably more important, the home game against Bremen, which they've already won, and the home game coming up on Friday against Borussia Mönchengladbach, who were second, which is even more important. The rotation wasn't the problem. Favre couldn't really do much about the fact that the players he brought in, who despite having the quality, and I mean by that, I mean Götze, I mean Pulisic, that didn't come off. That's not Favre's fault that those particular players looked completely blunt and uncreative and completely lacking in ideas going forward against an admittedly really, really, really well-organised Düsseldorf side.
Yeah.
The area where Favre does have to take the blame on this particular occasion on Tuesday night is the defensive tactics and the way he lined up that Dortmund back four so, so, so high.
Right.
He said before and after the game, we know how Düsseldorf are going to play. Everyone knew how Düsseldorf were going to play. They had Luka Bakio up front against Bayern Munich and scored two fantastic goals in the counter-attack. That's how they were going to play. So why have your defence lined up on the halfway line for the first 45 minutes? And time again, Düsseldorf got in behind. They had two good chances even before Luka Bakio scored. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were fortunate not to have been two or three nil down. That was the issue for me, rather than the rotation.
Yeah, I also think when it comes to complacency, you also have to put some of the defenders on that list as well. I remember a scene earlier in the game, and both Piszczek and Akanji went up for a ball and were beaten to it, and then kind of just loafed after it and didn't really try to get after the second ball.
I thought those second balls were a huge problem for Dortmund. The similar thing happened in the build to the goal. Jakob Brunslarsen caught in possession. Obviously, fair play to him for dropping deeper to get involved with the play. I think that was a positive side of his game. But then when in possession, a little bit deeper in the pitch, he was then caught in possession and there was no Dortmund player there to help out and win that second ball, win it straight back, and that led directly to Dusseldorf's first goal.
Yeah, Felix, where do you think that this leaves Dortmund now? Because in the grand scheme of things, it did allow both Gladbach and Bayern to gain ground on them, but it also was. They still have a 6-point lead to deal with. How much damage did this loss really do?
Well, I think if anything, as you said before that, that first defeat of the season was going to come at some point. And I think if anything, even in that sense, Dortmund are quote unquote lucky to get that defeat during that period of the season when they can afford it. To add to that, there's also the aspect of having like proper reasons for that defeat, if that makes sense. Like they can reason it with things like rotation, like the amount of games they had to play, all sorts of things that are very reasonable. So that's a defeat that's not too much to take and won't affect them psychologically. If anything, that might be a good way to come up to the Gladbach game with your feet on the ground and trying to make the most out of a game that's arguably much more important against basically the team that's currently second in the Bundesliga right behind them. So I think in that sense, a team that wants to win the league also, it's going to sound weird, but it also needs to know when to lose. And that's a good timing for Dortmund to get that first defeat, get it out of the way in that sense, even though they didn't want to win it, obviously. But just to not to have that burden on your back of keeping that record going. And that's something that Dortmund can basically come to the Gladbach game. And as we know, they have the ability to sort of explode on teams. They did it back last season when they played Gladbach. It was one of the greatest games of the season back in the good Bosch days. And it's going to be interesting to see how they react from it, because that's gonna be how they're going to be measured. If they're going to go ahead and convince and win the Gladbach game with a convincing display of football, then I think the Düsseldorf game is going to remain as an anecdote and not more than that. If they're not going to win it, however, then it's going to be interesting to see how things are going to develop.
Do you think there's anything from this game, Matt, that a team like Gladbach could take and say, oh, this is something that we could exploit?
Definitely. Look at the way Gladbach have been playing this season, albeit particularly at home. That front two, particularly of Torgan Hazard and Alisson Player. I think Stindl's still injured, isn't he? I'm not sure whether he'll be fit again for Friday, but he's been keying behind. But even just behind Stindl, Florian Neuhaus has been absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, he was outstanding against Nuremberg too.
Yeah, another assist and another goal against Nuremberg. I think that's 12 assists or something this season for Neuhaus. He's only 20, 21.
It's still really good.
Certainly one to look out for in future. He's having a fantastic season. So yeah, and we all Gladbach do play in a fairly similar way to the way Dusseldorf set up. What struck me about Gladbach in recent weeks, especially with some of these really convincing home wins that they've had against Nuremberg, against Stuttgart, Mainz also comes to mind. A lot of the time, the dam really only really broke in the second half when these so-called lesser teams came out at Gladbach in the second half a bit and left more gaps in behind, which Gladbach were able to exploit on the counter-attack, which is, exactly how Dieter Hecking has got them lined up. The way that we saw Dortmund playing against Dusseldorf, they'll certainly, Gladbach will take positives from that and take confidence. Also, given the fact that I think three defenders in Zagadou, Diallo and Akanji are all doubtful, if not completely ruled out, for Friday. So it's going to be an interesting one. On the other hand, on Gladbach's last, I think, last three visits to Dortmund, they've conceded 14 goals in total. So it's quite a difficult one to call. I think Gladbach themselves are probably still relatively vulnerable at the back if Dortmund go for them in the way they did ultimately against Düsseldorf in the final 20 minutes when Alcacer and Sancho came on. They looked a completely different proposition in those final stages. So yeah, that's the balance he's Hecking's going to have to get right. Is he going to look at these apparent defensive vulnerabilities in the Dortmund side and think, yeah, why not? We've had a great start to the season. Let's try and round off and go for it. We've got nothing to lose against the league leaders. Or is he going to think, yeah, we've shipped a few goals here in recent years. Let's make sure it doesn't happen. I hope it's the former, because that'll lead to an exciting game.
All right. Before we move on, we'd be remiss to not mention what happened on Monday, which was the Champions League draw. Dortmund got Tottenham Hotspur in the last 16. Felix, what do you think of that matchup?
I think it's going to be an entertaining matchup. Many people are talking about it as the games to look out for in terms of the fun part of the game, like attacking football, two teams that have many young prospects, and it's going to be exciting to see which one of these two teams are going to win this one. I think it's mostly interesting from a coaching point of view, because you have two coaches that, in a way, many people consider them similar in the sense that they like to involve, like they like to give young players a chance, and they like to play a certain brand of football that has more tendency to be more exciting, more attacking football. It's going to be interesting to see how these two teams gonna line up, if that's going to be the attacking affair that everybody talks about. And mostly, everybody hypes on it, and I'm really hoping it's not going to end in like a bore 1-1 or a 0-0 draw. I don't think it will, but it certainly is the most interesting matchup when it comes to the brand of football that both teams play, and I'm certainly looking forward to it, certainly.
Yeah, from a football point of view, I totally agree. Felix, I think it's probably the most attractive tie out of that draw.
What do you think are Dortmund's chances? By the way, do you think that they would be favoured going into this matchup?
I'm not sure if they're favourites. Maybe potentially marginally so, but then again, I think Spurs knocked Arsenal out of the League Cup last night, didn't they? Was it two nights ago? Lost track of time. Really, really hard one to call. So I wouldn't really want to go either way. I think Spurs are well known that when they turn up on the day, we've seen them beat Real Madrid in the Champions League this season already. They can turn up on the day. They can be fantastic to watch, and the likes of Dele Alli and Harry Kane can certainly give that Dortmund defence cause for concern. But the way Dortmund are playing, we know what they have at home. I wouldn't put it past them. One thing I would say is that I got a text from a Dortmund supporting mate of mine the moments after the draw saying, great, Tottenham again. He's got to go back to Wembley again because he doesn't think the ground will be ready in time. But we'll see what happens.
All right, let's move on to perhaps the best game of these midweek fixtures, which was Leipzig and Bayern Munich. It was certainly very exciting considering most of it was a scoreless match. But it was very end-to-end, and Bayern Munich came out on top with a late winner over Leipzig. Matt, you're shaking your head whether or not my claim is that the best match of the match day is true.
I think maybe it is one of the most important matches, and certainly an exciting lineup on paper. But the game itself, I don't think it was that good, especially compared to recent matches between RB and Bayern in recent years. I don't expect a 3-0 or a last-minute 5-4 every time they meet. But I don't think it was that exciting at all. I thought they actually both cancelled each other out.
I still find that exciting when you see teams...
Maybe intriguing rather than exciting.
Okay,
me and Felix were watching last night. We weren't sat on the edge of our seats wondering, what's going to happen this time, which is a shame from a footballing point of view, particularly when you consider the way Red Bull have been playing and the football they've been playing over the past couple of years. But Ranić made mainly tactical changes. They won't line up in that classic sort of 4-2-2-2 or 3-3-2-2 or whatever they've been playing in recent weeks, which then allows them to go forward so quickly and so penetratively. It was more of a 4-4-2, and I just thought they focused on pressing Bayern out of the game rather than maybe focusing on their own strengths, especially with the likes of Bruma and Werner going forward. I thought there was maybe a little bit of an opportunity missed, given that we know that Bayern haven't been the defensively stable side that we've known them to be in recent years. So I thought maybe an opportunity missed.
Yeah, Felix, we've talked about Leipzig as one of the best defenses in the Bundesliga, and by record that is the case. And yet they still, when Frank Ribery apparently cuts back in the 70s, whatever minute, it still seems like he can still undo the Leipzig defense. What did you think of Leipzig's performance in this game?
I thought from an offensive point of view, it was a really, really interesting game to watch. I mean, that's what we discussed yesterday when we watched it. From a Leipzig, if I'm taking the Leipzig angle here, I mean, Leipzig did very, very well in terms of their defensive ability with that, minus that Frank Ribery goal, because the way he dribbled past the two defenders and cancelled them with one dribble was, on the one hand, a brilliant Frank Ribery move, but on the other, it was poor defensive.
It's the one thing that Dayot Upamecano did wrong on,
Was a shame. It was a brilliant Dayot Upamecano match. He almost scored also from that corner, hit the post. And I mean, we discussed it last night. I mean, it was brilliant to see, on the one hand, Dayot Upamecano controlling the defense, coming back so quickly from corners and stuff. On the other hand, you had Zule that did roughly the same thing. Also, like a big defender physically, but yet he's so quick. And they both cancelled each other's attacks in a way that was very, very impressive, I thought. I thought Leipzig was very impressive at the back. It's funny because usually we talk about it like we talk about Leipzig of being like the other way around, like very exciting when it comes to their attacking brand of football. But then at the back, maybe some things they can tweak, some things they can boost.
Especially from set pieces. We see them shipping goals week in, week out from set pieces. But they seem to, Ranić seems to be focusing on that a bit more.
Yeah, and he's doing well. I mean, yesterday was just a really good defensive performance from both teams. But focusing on Leipzig, I think they justified that title we gave them and the title they currently have, like the best defense in the Bundesliga at the moment.
Yeah, this was an interesting matchup because in midweek last week, Matt, they were knocked out of the Europa League and did not look very impressive in that game. But yet when it comes to playing against Bayern Munich, they can show that they can hold their own. Is getting out of the Europa League a good thing for Leipzig, or do you think that's because they still had a chance to advance the last 16? This is a missed opportunity for them. Last 32, sorry.
I think it's quite a complicated one to look at. I think from a purely Bundesliga domestic campaign point of view, it won't do them any harm being out of the Europa League. They can focus on getting into that top four in the Bundesliga and getting into the Champions League, which I think in a weird sort of paradoxical and ironic and quite maybe hypocritical way is where they as a club and they as their sort of their fan base seem to see themselves. I think it's a bit out of order. They seem to see themselves above the Europa League. I'm not sure where they get that idea from. You know, they're a made-up franchise team, and there's not been European football in Leipzig for over 25 years, and yet you've only got between 16 and 20,000 turning up to games in the Europa League. I'm not sure why they think, as a fan base and even as a football club, that's somehow below them. But that's the modern construct that they are. That's a cultural issue with that sort of club. But yeah, like I said, from a Bundesliga point of view, it probably won't do them any harm. I actually think the squad's probably big enough to compete on both fronts, but whatever, they're out of that now, and they'll focus on the league, and that won't do their domestic domestic chances any harm. I wonder if that was key in the thinking of Ranić as well, because obviously he knows that Nagelsmann's coming in at the end of the season. So is he purposely looking ahead to that transition? I'm assuming he's going to step back into a purely Spartan director role again come the summer. So is he purposely looking at this sort of constellation and thinking, right, I'll leave Nagelsmann a team in the Champions League, knowing that that is where Nagelsmann is in his development as well? Would it perhaps be, in long-term thinking, a step back for Nagelsmann to suddenly go from Champions League group stage Hoffenheim, taking over Red Bull next season back in the Europa League? I don't know if that maybe factors in Ranić's long-term thinking. But yeah, it's a complicated one and a bit odd, I think.
Yeah. The one incident I want to talk about in this game, which was odd, was the red card from Stefan Elsanker. It was really late in the game. It was...
He's been on the pitch 10 minutes, hasn't he? He came on.
Yeah, I mean, but it was a justified red card, his foul on Thiago, right?
I think just about. It wouldn't have been huge complaints if he'd only got away with a yellow card for it. But yeah, it was late. Studs were up. It was a bit reckless. Yeah. And that's the third time in three visits to Munich that they've had a player sent off, isn't it?
So you have after that tackle, you have Frank Ribery and Renato Sanches coming over and pushing him back to the ground. Felix, did they deserve more punishment for what they did? I mean, obviously, Renato Sanches was sent off with a second yellow, but it seemed like Frank Ribery got off scot-free.
I didn't think so. I think it was just a heated atmosphere at that moment after that tackle, because when I first saw it, I thought, whoa, that's a very, very hard tackle. But having seen it in replays, I do agree with what Matt said. It's one of those things that it seems very strong, but when you're seeing it live. But on the other hand, when you see the replay, you think maybe a yellow would have also been okay. But given that is the case, that when you see the tackle, you're something in you tells you that this was a very hard tackle. I think the general atmosphere sort of triggered whatever happened there with Ribery and Sanches. I thought the referee handled the situation well. I thought his decision were justified. They were the right decisions. And at the end of the day, I think, given the fact that it was the biggest game of this Bundesliga weekend, I don't think we felt the referee. I mean, he made all the right calls, and at the end of the day, it was just a good... I once heard a sentence that I really think it rings true when it comes to refereeing. The best refereeing is when you don't really feel the referee is there. And that was exactly the case in this game. So all in all, in the grand scheme of things, I think job well done. And also when it comes to handling that particular incident with Elsanker, Ribery and Sanches, I thought the referee did a good job.
I actually didn't even realise that Sanches had been sent off. I was made aware of that about an hour after the full-time whistle. I was too busy typing away. Yeah. But I think just want to point out another narrative that we had going into that game was the Timo Werner. I've had a few people suggesting that, is this like an audition for him? He's obviously not signed a contract extension yet. Wouldn't be a surprise if he was going to end up at Bayern at some point. And he was asked after the game as well, is Bayern an option for you? And I think he said, I don't think it was that subtle, really, was it? He said, yeah, if you play for Red Bull.
If you want to stay in Germany, there's only one club that you can play for.
Hint, hint. But I don't think in his performance, I'm not sure he did himself any favours in terms of an audition. Yeah. Whether that was part of the tactical switch to 4-4-2, I thought he seemed...
It was strange because...
He was very, very, very wide. I mean, I know he liked coming off the wings anyway, but he was absolutely hugging that touchline, and I thought that took him out of the game a little bit at times.
Yeah, it was strange because it seemed like what Leipzig wanted to do was exploit the space that Joshua Kimmich was giving them when he was pushing
and
forward.
And how many times we said that, not just playing for Bayern, but Germany as well. That happened a few times last night. So.
But despite that, I mean, Bayern Munich now, who coming out of this crisis a little bit, they got their first home win a week and a half ago since September. We talked about that a few weeks ago. But now they've done what they needed to do in the Champions League. They came up with a big win over Hannover over the weekend, and now a win against Leipzig, a team in the top four. This Bayern team's now looking good again, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, good is maybe a strong word, but they're getting the results they need. And that's what Niko Kovac needs most of all. I think the system needs to be calmed down, and that is happening. I think you can read what Salihamidžić and Hoeneß said in the last couple of days. You can see the system is basically getting out slowly but surely out of this crisis mode. And that's good news mostly for Niko Kovac and his job. But at the end of the day, yeah, Bayern get the job done. That's what they need to do from now, and basically from in the last couple of games. And also now they get the results they need. They get the wins they need. They get the confidence back. Also yesterday, a game that was more like it didn't necessarily go in their favor. Like Leipzig were the better team for large parts of the game when it comes to their to going forward. But they still got the result they needed. So at the end of the day, it was a good day for Bayern. Those basics are returning again. And it's going to be interesting to see how the Rückrunde will going to start.
Yeah. Lost Serge Gnabry in this game, which is, I mean, he's been their best player going forward, perhaps this season. I think we can all agree with that.
He was their best player in the first 20 minutes as well before his injury.
Yeah.
I think when Lewandowski had that big chance in the first half, it was Gnabry that played the ball into him. Mm-hmm. And definitely a bigger threat than Coman was throughout the entire game on the other side. I'm not sure whether that's down to experience, Coman's constant injury problems, so lack of consistency there.
Well, it's Coman's first, I think, maybe his second or third start since coming back from injury.
Yeah,
so
true. Nowhere near the consistency that Gnabry's had, though. And I think, yeah, it's just slight doubts there regarding Bayern that once again, obviously this one was injury induced, but it took Frank Ribery to come on and make the difference for them. As much as we've been impressed with Gnabry and we want to see Coman getting more games, it was the old guard that made the difference again. And if we talk about every week, don't we, about Bayern's transition, how are they going to move on to this next generation of Bayern players, doesn't necessarily send the right signals.
Yeah, they go to Frankfurt on Saturday. This is a match that I think maybe a few weeks ago would have been a real trouble matchup for Bayern Munich. But Felix, they look a little bit better going into this one, and perhaps maybe they can actually get a victory in this game and Kovac's return to Frankfurt.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how the Frankfurt game is going to play out when it comes to Bayern Munich. We also have to bear in mind that Frankfurt know how to do that counter-attacking style of play with the likes of Jovic and Haller and Kostic on the wing. They know how to do these things. So I wouldn't be surprised if Bayern will be caught with that high line of defense again, like in the Düsseldorf game a couple of weeks ago. And Frankfurt do it arguably. I think they're the best team when it comes to their counter-attacking abilities with that particular element in their attack, especially Luka Jovic. I mean, the top scorer in the league right now, together with Paco Alcacer. It's going to be a real test for them, I think. I don't think it's going to play out the same way as the Leipzig game, especially in the sense that they're playing away. Frankfurt fans will be certainly up for it. So yeah, it's going to be an interesting test for Bayern Munich's abilities, and it's going to be mostly interesting to see how they handle that pressure, because Frankfurt proved this season that they're more than a worthy opponent to basically everyone with their attacking fun brand of football that everyone here likes, I think. Yeah.
And Matt, they're playing Liverpool in the Champions League. They're placing Jurgen Klopp once again, an old nemesis. What do you think of that matchup in the Champions League?
I think it's probably one of the toughest ones they could have got.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely agree with that.
Especially the Jurgen Klopp will be obviously more than well aware of Bayern's struggles this season. And I think, yeah, given the sort of damage that teams can do to Bayern Munich, especially playing on the counter-attack and hitting them with pace that Bayern don't necessarily have, or that Kovac hasn't really got them playing with, I think they can cause them all sorts of problems. I think it's interesting that the Bayern has been linked with Lucas Hernandez now over the summer. player.
80 million euros that has been linked. That's his buyout clause, correct?
Yeah.
Whether, I think that's his buyout clause,
yeah, I mean,
which I think was misleading when we saw reports that Bayern Munich were willing to pay 80 million euros for Lucas Hernandez.
It's only one reporting marker, but if that, even if it is the direction they're looking at, it's a player in a similar mould to Andy Robinson, the fullback at Liverpool, and I think that's, yeah, it's definitely a move from Kovac towards a slightly more modern brand of football that Jurgen Klopp's been introducing or been playing over the past couple of years at Liverpool as well. Liverpool, based on recent performances, they can go into those two games against Bayern with absolutely no fear and send a bit of a signal, I think.
All right, the last game we want to talk about this week was Schalke's loss to Leverkusen. And I want to pose this question. I did not bring this up before the show because I wanted to pose this question. Are we sure that Domenico Tedesco is the right manager for Schalke right now?
It's not just a question about Domenico Tedesco. It's a question mark over Christian Heidel as well. They're 16th now, I think. Only one, or 15th, or 15th, only 1 point above the relegation zone. Everything that could have gone wrong this season for Schalke has gone wrong. We've talked about it numerous times. It started before the season when the transfers they made were completely underwhelming and nowhere near the level which is required to achieve the aims that they'd set themselves and to become a top four Bundesliga team and permanent Champions League competitors. Fingers have to be pointed at Christian Heidel for that. The other big question mark, as we've discussed time and time again, is can Domenico Tedesco fashion an offensive unit in the same way that he can sort out a solid defence? And the answer after the first half of the season is absolutely not. Leverkusen have been shipping goals this season, or the leakiest defences in the Bundesliga, and yet Schalke still looked completely blunt and clueless up front against them. I think me and you had to laugh last night, didn't we, Felix, when Jevon Konoplyanka went through one-on-one, and I don't know, has he not got a left foot? He could have hit it with his left, with the outside of his right. He could have done anything, but he'd opted to cut inside and take two more touches when clean through on goal. It was so frustrating. And this, yeah, list likes it against Leverkusen team, which has been there for the taking on occasions at time this season. Yeah, Schalke, the biggest disappointment of the first half of the season so far, and yeah, big questions.
Yeah, I think before the season, I don't know if you were on this pod, Felix, but a lot of us, I'll say I did not put them in the top four, but a lot of people assumed that they would be in the top four, and they have been looked anything but a top four side.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's mostly, I think Tedesco is trying what he can, given the players that he has. I mean, he has to play with a young American, Haji Wright, as a striker yesterday. Factually scored, but at the end of the day, this is the sort of experiment that a manager, that a coach in that case, tries when he feels like his other options are off the table. They're not working. So I think Tedesco has been trying to make the most out of it and has been trying to give young players a chance, which is always a good thing. But at the end of the day, I think we have to both look at Heidel and the way Schalke's players are performing right now as the reasons that are arguably, I think, are bigger than Tedesco's share in this. Because at the end of the day, you spoke about that Konoplyanka chance. At the end of the day, when a player stands in front of a goal, it's his job to score. And unlike last season, they were so efficient last season, and this season they're not. They just can't use the chances that they have to get that one goal that they sometimes need to win a game. Add their defensive woes to the equation, and you get a side that's underperforming, in like the most underperforming side in the league. So I think we also have to point some fingers at Schalke's players. But Tedesco is certainly one. It's certainly one of the three elements that everyone will blame. But at the end of the day, I personally feel and think that Schalke's players and Christian Heidel's dealings in the transfer market are more to blame for this Schalke season.
Well, it's strange because when we were coming into the season, we were lauding Christian Heidel for getting players like Omar Mascarell and Sebastian Rudy and getting Mark Uth from Hoffenheim. These were all players that played really well last season. So how much blame can... I mean, it seems like we do put a lot of blame. I mean, I personally put a lot of blame for Heidel not extending more of the players that came through Schalke's academy system, especially early when he got there. But at the same time, we were sitting here 4 months ago saying that it was genius that Sebastian Rudi came over from Bayern Munich and is going to sit in that Schalke midfield.
Yeah, but
if we can go back to the Ricardians from 4 months ago and prove that we were claiming that was genius transfer.
Well, I wouldn't say it was genius, but we were.
I'm not sure that's the case. I think the only transfer, and again, I'm happy for the Ricardians to prove me completely wrong on this and show me what an idiot I am. But I think the only genius signing or good signing on paper was Sebastian Rudi, and even that's not come off at all. Whether the reasons for that are to do with Tedesco or Rudy's own personal season off the back of a difficult time at Bayern Munich, I don't know. As for the others, Omar Mascherell was an underwhelming signing. Suat Serdar Mainz was an underwhelming signing. Mark Utz is nowhere near a top four Bundesliga or Champions League striker.
Well, he was a Champions League striker, though. He got Hoffenheim into the Champions League last year.
That doesn't make him a Champions League striker. Just because you get Hoffenheim into the Champions League in the Bundesliga on goal difference does not make you a Champions League level striker.
Also, how hard was it for Hoffenheim to replace him? I mean, they're still playing the same brand of football. Their strikers roughly produce the same numbers. Yeah. And at the end of the day, that just goes to show that Mark Uth was maybe one part of the system, but he wasn't at the level you would think that a Schalke striker needs to be.
And in bringing in Joe Linton, they've showed that from a recruitment point of view, they're much more switched on than Schalke as well. That's the transfer and squad management side of things. In terms of a tactical point of view, I think it's been telling in the past couple of weeks. Obviously, you mentioned how it maybe smacked of desperation a little bit, the fact that he was starting Hadji Wright up front. Fair play to him, he got his goal set up by Weston McKennie.
Well, okay,
I think that's the first ever goal to be assisted and scored by
an
two
American.
Americans. Yeah. So there you go. What one for you, Davis?
Yeah, so, but
USA.
Yeah, but it's not like Breland Bolo is injured, Mark Uth is injured. I'm not sure that Franco Di Santo is also fit. These are the three players that.
But even if Mbolo and Di Santo,
that's three strikers. But
even if they were fit, would there be much difference? Are they really of the quality required to fulfill Schalke's own aims, which they've set for themselves?
When Mbolo and Di Santo were fit last season, their fans were basically mocking them for not scoring. So I mean.
It's really not a clever situation. And I know he's been forced into some of these tactical changes by injury. I understand that and I accept that. But you know, Weston McKennie played up front, effectively played up front, against Dortmund as well in the derby. You're never going to score. I think at one
Mendil
point,
Mendil was also
that was
playing.
Honestly, I think I said it last week. They had Hamza Mendil, Nabil Bentaleb, and Weston McKennie as a front three going into half time. I'm sorry, that is a system which is absolutely all over the place. Tedesco takes his fair share of the blame, especially from an offensive point of view. I think defensively they are still relatively sound there, although I think it's a shame that Daniel Calajori is being dragged back deeper and deeper and deeper into a really extreme fullback role when
he's basically a fullback.
Exactly. We know he has a lot to offer going forward,
right.
So it's a shame to see him restricted like that. I really don't. Who have they got this weekend? Schalke. I've not looked. Does anyone know?
We'll
cut this bit out.
Stuttgart away.
Stuttgart away this weekend, obviously against a former coach in Markus Weinziel. If they're going to have any hope going into the new year, whether moral hope or even sort of tactical footballing hope, yeah, that's the place to get a result. But even Stuttgart will be looking at Schalke now and thinking, yeah, this is a chance for us to go into Christmas on a high as well. I think Schalke are in big, big trouble, and I think, yeah, questions have to be asked at all levels of that club. They've let themselves down massively this season.
So how does this get fixed? Because, I mean, they do have a Champions League tie against Manchester City, which seems irrelevant at the moment. Because
I favour Schalke so much in that game.
Yeah, so basically it's a not-in-the-face tie. But still, this is a team that was second place last season. There has to be something that they can... There has to be something there that they can fix.
No, I don't think Schalke's squad as a whole is worthy of the place it's in at the moment. Absolutely not. They're underperforming, the most underperforming side in the Bundesliga, arguably, right now. And there are things that that can be tried, especially when you have the January transfer window in front of you. I mean, an attacking, like strengthening their attack is something that I think Christian Heidel will look to do. Something that Christian Heidel will search for is options during the January transfer window. But at the end of the day, even then, and even if Schalke will maximize their ability now and start playing exactly like last season, Manchester City is like, they're playing, they're the best, they're arguably the best team in the Premier League together with Liverpool right now. And it's arguably just one or two levels above Schalke's way, even at their best, let alone right now and the way they play. I mean, we hailed Tedesco's ability to organize their defense. This is going to be a stern test for their defensive abilities, put it this way, given how Manchester City plays and given their very specific brand of football. Yeah, it's probably... It's one of the most one-sided ties, if not the most one-sided ties.
I'd definitely write it off, that Champions League. I think they were fortunate.
Yeah, like I said, irrelevant.
The group they got put in, that was the easiest group going, so they were fortunate to get out of that. You talked about potential moves that you could make in January. I think the one they've been linked with so far is Sandro Wagner, potentially, if I'm not wrong. I believe I've read that. For me, once again, that's another Marcoute signing. It's nowhere near the level which corresponds to the aims.
So what kind of player do you think that they need to get?
I don't know, I'm not gonna start just pulling random names out of the hat and throwing them forward. I think that's for Christian Heidel to sort out in the course of not just January. I think this season's too far gone for that. I think those plans have to start being made now, finalised throughout the season so that they can work properly and rebuild that squad in summer. For me, now the focus for Schalke would have to be, as much as it probably would displease some of their supporters, because it is a wasted season, so go back to the football they played last season, go back to what Tedesco knows he can do, be solid, work your way back up and finish in the top half, maybe get into the Europa League. Because, you're right, Felix, they are too good to be 1 point clear of relegation, but they are nowhere near good enough to be anywhere near the Champions League.
All right, let's leave it there. Thank you so much for listening to this week's edition of Tribune Weekly. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, and if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribune Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribune Podcast. We will try to do a show after the 17th match day, the last match day in 2018, but we cannot guarantee. So if we don't come back before then, I hope that everybody listening has a happy holidays. You can follow Matt Ford on Twitter at Matt_4D, Felix Tomzet at FTomzet, and I'm at Davis_Finalco. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.